I thought I was building the future, a decentralized empire of trust, built on code and conviction. But behind the blinking lights of our server room was a lie, a carefully engineered illusion powered by offshore accounts, market manipulation, and one man's obsession with power. My name doesn't matter. What I saw does. I was there when it started, and I watched it collapse. This isn't a story about crypto. It's about betrayal. It's about how ethical standards were rewritten in the shadows, how emotions were engineered, and how the people who trusted us were manipulated by the very tools we claimed to liberate them with. You want to understand dark psychology? This is it. From inside the lab. From inside Celsius. This is my story, the story of the market of lies. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. I used to think truth was stored in code. Lines of it. Cold. Untouchable. But I was wrong. Truth is malleable, like heat, when you put enough pressure on the right people. At Celsius, I worked where the heat lived. Behind a double-locked door labeled server, authorized only. Back there, time didn't tick. It blinked, in blue and green. And every blinking light was a heartbeat in a machine that lied better than most humans ever could. I didn't start out knowing it was a lie. None of us did. We were engineers, marketers, analysts, talking Web3 dreams over bad coffee. But now I know better. I was an accessory to market manipulation, to psychological warfare dressed up as financial freedom. And I'm here to tell you how we did it, and how I finally broke. My name is irrelevant, but I was one of the architects behind Celsius Network's infrastructure. Specifically, the architecture of trust. Because that's what crypto runs on, right? Not banks. Not laws. Trust. My team built the pipes that moved billions. Cold wallets. Multi-sig approvals. Front-end obfuscation. Most engineers just coded. I watched. I studied the human dynamics, not just the back end. Watched Mashinsky in meetings, running whiteboard sessions like a messiah with a marker. He didn't speak in code. He spoke in mantras. We're unbanking the banked. CL is freedom. Trust through decentralization. But I saw the server room logs. I saw the admin wallets. And the things we told the public didn't line up with the things we ran privately. It started with a folder. One line of code changed. No Jira ticket. No log trail. Just a push to production at 2:37 a.m. on a Saturday. The code throttled CL token visibility on our internal ledger. It looked like price support, but it was market psychology engineering. Smoothing volatility, suppressing withdrawals, controlling perception. Later, we'd call it security. But it was a script. And that script rewrote reality. You don't realize how easily people can be influenced until you control the exit doors of their money. I remember watching Mashinsky through the glass as he pitched to a room full of VCs. He was electric, charismatic. He spoke like a preacher and marketed like a magician. We're better than the banks. More honest. More transparent. And yet, I'd just rerouted a withdrawal queue to delay $3.2 million in institutional exits. Why? Because one of our partners had flagged a liquidity stress signal. Internally, they called it the fog. It meant we were broke, but still smiling. That day, I went home and sat in the dark. Watched my ceiling fan spin like a noose. Tried not to think about the retiree in Kansas whose crypto we'd frozen without telling them. Just a technical error email. Nothing more. Over time, you stop feeling guilt. You start optimizing it. They told us to be masters of influence. That we weren't lying, just curating financial narratives. We were briefed on NLP techniques, body language, audio manipulation for investor calls. Mashinsky even invited a behavioral consultant who taught us how to mirror emotions, use tone pacing, control group dynamics. I called it manipulation. He called it leadership. But the moment that broke me came in server room 3. That's where the legacy backups were kept. Deep storage. Air-gapped. One night, during a routine audit, I saw a folder labeled Militia. No one ever talked about it. Inside were comms from a hidden Slack channel. They talked openly about pumping the CL token, using fake OTC trades to suggest market health, selling CL to retail clients even after we knew the floor was gone. One message hit me like a punch. Just keep the believers busy. When they're emotionally invested, it takes weeks before they pull out. That wasn't strategy. That was emotional exploitation. That was weaponized trust. I copied everything, encrypted it, saved it to a personal drive. But I didn't run. Not yet. Something in me wanted to see how deep it went. What else were we hiding? Who else was helping? Mashinsky wasn't alone. There were layered access logs, mirrored permissions, server-side keys that led to offshore cold wallets, the kind that never got reported to regulators. And behind every dump of data I decrypted was another shadowed truth. I started sleeping at the office, stopped answering calls. Even my fiancé noticed I was different. I just said, "Work's intense." But the truth, I was standing at the edge of something, a cliff made of con artist architecture, built by men who knew how to manipulate the market, the media, and human emotions. The longer I stayed, the more I understood. We weren't building a company. We were orchestrating a psychological con. This is how it started. With silence. With blinking lights. With ethical standards sacrificed for quarterly growth. But I'm not silent anymore. I'm going to tell you what came next. How I became a threat. How I became disposable. And how this entire operation unraveled in public view. Long after we buried it in the server room. You ever watch someone hypnotize a room? That was Mashinsky's gift. He didn't need screens. Didn't need PowerPoints. He had something else, something harder to detect. Celestial insight. That's what he called it. And when he walked into a meeting room, we followed it like disciples. They say manipulation works best when it feels like a calling. Inside Celsius, that calling came wrapped in startup slogans and the illusion of ethical leadership. But underneath, buried in pitch decks and whisper networks, was the architecture of cult-level control. We had these all-hands meetings every second Monday. Mashinsky didn't talk to us like employees. He spoke like a man delivering a prophecy. "We're not building a company. We're rebuilding society." Everyone clapped. I didn't. Not anymore. That day, he unveiled something called the Unbanking Manifesto. It sounded revolutionary. But as he broke it down, I realized it wasn't a roadmap. It was a psychological blueprint. A guide on how to socially engineer belief in investors and employees alike. You don't sell crypto. You sell control over fear. You don't sell numbers. You sell freedom from numbers. You don't market Celsius. You market shame relief. He paused after that one. Let it hang. And people nodded like they just heard scripture. I looked around the room. Product leads, marketing heads, growth hackers, all trained in persuasion methods, cognitive psychology, even body intelligence workshops. We weren't a tech company anymore. We were a theater. A few days later, a marketing strategist pulled me into a breakout room. "We're rolling out the new CL Trust video. You're in it." I didn't remember signing off on anything. Didn't matter. They had footage of me, explaining back-end logic, edited over emotional piano music, cut with footage of farmers and children smiling. Narrative manipulation. Emotional alignment. Media seduction. We were taught to curate stories, not tell them. And once we controlled the story, we could engineer outcomes. Market emotions, investor actions, even employee loyalty. The company started hiring influencers, not just tech analysts, fitness gurus, self-help coaches, even a famous chess streamer. People with reach, not relevance. They weren't pitching Celsius, they were pitching hope. Hope, powered by offshore accounts, fabricated liquidity, and curated tales of personal growth. They trained us on psychology tips, persuasive language tools, and influence mastery. I watched grown men rehearse emotional tempo like actors prepping for Broadway. One night, I stayed late. Security logs. Off-level checks. And I found something that chilled me. A white-labeled behavioral report titled Human Conversion Efficiency, Q2. Inside, graphs of how long it took for new users to move from interest to deposit. Breakdowns of language techniques that best triggered action. Charts cross-referencing user fear levels with market timing. It wasn't just tech. It was mind manipulation science. And we were treating people's trust like code we could A/B test. That same week, Mashinsky flew to Zurich. Back at HQ, something shifted. A memo leaked from an internal team, a restructuring plan. It wasn't about headcount. It was about control hierarchy. Internal loyalty tiers. Behavioral scores. Emotional reliability indexes. Anyone who asked too many questions was flagged. I was ranked moderate compliance, high skill, moderate risk. The moment I saw that, I stopped being part of the system. I started studying it, from inside. I couldn't tell anyone. Not yet, but I needed backup. So I started collecting evidence, screenshots, files, access logs, encrypted, scattered. One day, while copying data onto a black flash drive labeled Echo, I felt something behind me. I turned fast. It was Sarah, our behavioral risk officer. She didn't say anything, just smiled. But that smile, it wasn't human, it was trained. And I knew in that moment, I wasn't just working in a fraud. I was being watched inside a psychological lab. Celsius wasn't a startup. It was an emotional machine powered by market manipulation, behavioral science, and scripted authenticity. We weren't just unbanking people. We were rewiring them, one belief at a time, one manipulated emotion at a time. And I was in too deep to just walk away. There's a phrase I kept hearing back then, quietly, almost jokingly. The money's offshore, just like the blame. I used to laugh along. Now I know it wasn't a joke. It was a warning. If the Celsius network was a city, then the offshore structure was its sewer system, hidden, vital, and full of rot. On paper, everything pointed to decentralization. In reality, there were five jurisdictions managing most of our assets, and none of them were the US. It started with an email. No subject. No signature. Just a line. Check the Flowbank node. Port 6223. At first, I ignored it. I'd been getting strange pings ever since I started backing up files. But something about that one, it felt internal, like someone was leaving breadcrumbs. I opened the logs, routed through a Swiss-based node. Server address was masked, but once decrypted, it showed traffic flowing in and out of something called Apollo Entity 4X. I'd never heard of it, not in any of our diagrams, but it had admin-level hooks into our withdrawal queue logic. The more I dug, the more the illusion unraveled. There were wallet clusters tied to unlisted accounts, token reissuance events done silently, and even mint and burn cycles that conveniently matched PR release dates. In essence, they were controlling the market psychology by timing liquidity bursts with investor sentiment spikes. It was engineered hope. Then came the rabbit hole. British Virgin Islands, Cayman Islands, Zug, Switzerland. All roads led to a dense network of shell entities that acted like insulation. Each one handled a different layer. One processed withdrawals. One secured digital assets. One was labeled simply, Strategic Communications Holding. I clicked on that one. Inside was a folder, X's and O's. It held scripts, literal behavioral playbooks, written for investor webinars, AMA sessions, and even CEO live streams. If sentiment drops below 0.42 on trend graphs, inject a donation story or humanitarian use case to raise emotional appeal. Frame withdrawals as belief waivers, not as system failures. Belief waivers. We weren't just manipulating money. We were manipulating identity. One night, I made the mistake of telling Sean, a back-end dev who sat two cubicles from mine. He didn't even blink. Yeah, it's all routed through Apollo. KYC compliance is just for show. You think Mashinsky built Celsius to share power? Then he looked at me like I was the crazy one. Don't fight it. Learn the game. That line hit different. Because suddenly, I saw what Celsius really was. A controlled simulation. A multi-layered trust theater, powered by regulated language, but shielded by offshore liquidity and psychological insulation. I started noticing strange things after that. Internal dashboards disappeared. Admin privileges I once had were silently revoked. My card key failed twice. My laptop began to glitch around the same time I accessed logs related to something labeled Valkyrie nodes. It was clear. I was being monitored, maybe even tested. I bought a burner phone the next morning, began copying only what I could hide. The rest I printed, yes, printed, and sealed in legal envelopes I dropped in random post offices addressed to myself. Paranoid? Maybe. But after what I saw, it was survival instinct. The biggest red flag came during an emergency leadership sync. Mashinsky dialed in from a villa in Monaco. Behind him, ocean waves, white linen, a glass of what looked like scotch. "Let the market panic," he said. "That's when the weak sell. That's when we buy them back." I stared at the screen. Other leaders nodded. And I finally realized. Celsius wasn't reacting to chaos. It was manufacturing it. Using dark psychology, market emotion exploitation, and human behavior metrics to trap users in cycles of fear, reassurance, and dependence. At night, I began recording voice memos. For myself. For proof. For sanity. Here's one. They're not just moving crypto, they're moving control. Social manipulation isn't a side effect, it's the product. And we're all in too deep to just leave. They've built a machine, and the power source isn't money. It's belief. That's when I decided to plan my exit. Not just physically, but narratively. Because what I'd witnessed wasn't just fraud. It was a masterclass in mass persuasion, fueled by offshore systems, orchestrated scarcity, and a ruthless understanding of emotional engineering. I couldn't fight them legally, not yet. But I could outwit them in story. And that's what this recording is. My confession, my warning, my revenge. They used to say trust and honesty, so often at Celsius. I started to hear it in quotes, not as values, as slogans, as psychological mitigation techniques. Because when a lie is told in the tone of truth, people don't question the message, they question their own instincts. That was Mashinsky's real gift. Not blockchain, not finance, narrative infection. I remember the meeting like it was a dream I couldn't wake up from. Q2 morale check-in. Dozens of us packed into a glass-walled conference room. On the screen, a slide that simply read, "Trust equals control of perception." Mashinsky smiled like he'd invented gravity. People don't need the truth. They need consistency. If you give them that, they'll call it honesty. There was a pause. No one pushed back. Not even me. We'd stopped reacting months ago. We weren't team members anymore. We were performers in a global illusion, where ethical leadership was just a lighting trick. The company handbook had an entire chapter on voice alignment. That's what they called our scripting strategy for investor outreach. Each department had a tone guide, even color palettes for presentations that matched emotional confidence levels of retail users. Example: blue equals trust recovery, green equals momentum messaging, yellow equals skeptic reassurance. We weren't delivering updates, we were managing belief. Then came the worst part, the internal wellness initiative. They called it body intelligence optimization. Sounded like a self-help app, but it was a soft surveillance network. Weekly check-ins weren't about burnout. They were about emotional predictability. Were you too quiet? Too reactive? Did your productivity dip after major CL fluctuations? If you triggered enough flags, you'd get a private session with HR. But HR didn't ask about stress. They asked about loyalty. Do you still feel aligned with our vision? That question haunts me to this day. Because behind every wellness check, behind every supportive conversation, was the real goal. Identify threats. Reassign loyalty. Preserve the illusion. At one point, they brought in a team called the Mirrors. I kid you not, they were internal performance coaches. Their job: monitor calls, Slack messages, even tone of voice. Then coach you to be on brand. Mine told me, you're too forensic. Too cold. People won't follow someone who sounds like a machine. I remember staring at her like she was trying to rewrite who I was, because that's exactly what she was doing. At Celsius, you weren't trusted for who you were. You were rewritten into who the company needed you to be. One day, I finally confronted a senior dev about the CL token manipulation. I had proof: backdoor code fragments, logs from the Valkyrie nodes, internal analytics showing when and how we manufactured price bumps. He didn't even blink. You're overthinking it. Everyone does this. It's just part of the market game. This is how modern influence works. Then he said the words I'll never forget. Stop looking for truth. Start designing it. That was the moment my brain snapped. Because in that one sentence, I saw the full spectrum of what we were doing. We weren't just misleading. We weren't even deceiving. We were authoring alternate realities for profit. Curated emotional narratives, engineered belief structures, investor psychology scripts, and all of it wrapped in buzzwords about transparency, laced with just enough data to sedate the skeptics. You know what scared me most? It worked. Investors came back. Withdrawals slowed. CL rose temporarily. The illusion stabilized. All because we adjusted the perception controls. Trust was never broken, it was simply modified. And in that modification process, we became experts in human engineering. We didn't need guns. We had language. We had timing. We had control of context. And with that, we had everything. So, what do you call a company that rewrites emotions? That punishes doubt? That surveils its own in the name of loyalty? A cult with a wallet. But cults eventually crack, not because the illusion dies, but because someone inside stops believing. And I was done believing. The CL token wasn't just a digital asset. It was a weapon of belief. It was the carrot, the spell, the lie you wanted to believe because everything around it was designed to make it feel inevitable. The more you hold, the more you earn. Loyalty equals yield. CL is the heartbeat of financial freedom. What they didn't tell you was that behind that heartbeat was a pulse of manipulation, controlled not by markets, but by us. I remember the first time I realized we were scripting reality. I just finished compiling an internal graph of user behavior during CL price swings. The correlation wasn't just strong, it was surgical. Every time the token dipped, withdrawals spiked. Every time we pushed a marketing video or staged an AMA, trust temporarily recovered, and CL bumped back up. It wasn't market dynamics. It was emotional choreography. And the rhythm? It was ours. One file in particular changed everything. A document titled, Token Sentiment Mitigation Flow, Q3/Confidential. Inside were specific instructions on how to manufacture bullish momentum. Time CL buybacks with macro crypto news. Leak partnership rumors during low morale. Use influencer comments to trigger retail confidence. We even had a color-coded scale that mapped market emotion to narrative interventions. Red equals fear, inject, were hiring signals. Yellow equals hesitation, release testimonials from long-term holders. Green equals belief, encourage staking. This wasn't investing. This was psychological warfare wrapped in code. I spent my nights reviewing wallet logs. What I found disgusted me. A cluster of master wallets, tied to internal aliases, some named after Greek gods, some just numbers. They were used to sell CL at local highs, rebuy at lows, and fake liquidity when withdrawals surged. We were simulating demand with internal market manipulation, faking volume to make CL look stronger than it was. Meanwhile, Mashinsky was on interviews telling the public, "We're the most transparent company in crypto. We don't manipulate anything, we let the market decide." Bullshit. I was watching it happen in real time, from inside the server room. I ran the damn code. There was a saying in the office. If it looks bullish, it becomes bullish. We weren't reacting to market forces. We were engineering reality, using CL as a feedback loop to control investor emotion, identity, and behavior. They weren't just holding CL, they were being held by CL. Eventually, the internal panic began to crack through the illusion. Whale withdrawals triggered back-end alerts. DeFi platforms stopped integrating. A few quiet lawsuits started showing up on encrypted threads. But the response? Doubled down on the narrative. That week, we launched Celsius Heroes, a gamified staking program. They framed it like a movement. Tiered loyalty levels. Badges. Digital rewards for emotional obedience. People called it brilliant. I called it cult economics. We were using game psychology and positive reinforcement theory to trap users in the very system we were dismantling behind the scenes. At one point, I confronted a tokenomics strategist. "We're faking the floor. This is fraud." He looked at me calm. "We're not faking anything. We're managing expectations. This is how the real world works. You don't win by being honest. You win by being first." Then he handed me a printed chart titled Influence Ladder, CL Holders. It broke our user base into psychological types. Believers, emotionally invested. Traders, logic-driven, risk-tolerant. Tourists, easily swayed by social proof. And next to each type, recommended manipulation techniques. I felt sick. This wasn't strategy. This was behavioral engineering with collateral damage. And the worst part? It worked. Months later, when the first cracks hit the press, we watched the CL price drop, then rebound, then drop again. The team cheered the rebound. See, loyalty is strong. But I knew better. We weren't seeing loyalty. We were seeing delayed collapse, propped up by people who were too ashamed to admit they'd been conned. Cognitive dissonance as a retention strategy. The token game was never about CL. It was about testing the limits of influence, about how far people would go when you offered them an identity with a ticker symbol attached to it. And when that identity started to crack, we handed them new words to say, new dreams to buy into, new stories to keep them from pulling the plug. By the end of it, CL wasn't a token. It was a belief virus, one we coded, tested, and unleashed into a market hungry for freedom, but blind to how much control they were surrendering. The night it all shifted. The server room was colder than usual. I remember it because the air had a hum, not the sound of machines, but the kind that fills your ears when your heart is beating too loud. That was the night I met Spectre. Not a person, a file. And the moment I opened it, I stopped being an employee. It was 2:12 a.m. I'd stayed late under the excuse of optimizing latency on our token liquidity scripts. In reality, I was digging. For weeks I'd been copying logs, creating encrypted image files, uploading them to hidden Git folders under fake names like Art Exploration 2.0 and PS1 prototypes. I was building a personal black box, in case everything went wrong. I didn't know how soon that would be. A system alert pinged me. Unauthorized access attempt in server Vault C. That's cold storage for archived comms and deprecated access credentials, mostly overlooked. I thought it was a glitch. I opened the internal audit trail. That's when I saw it. Spectre.log. Timestamped. Untouched. Encrypted in layers I'd never seen before. I bypassed two fail-safes. Forced decryption with an old admin master key. The screen blinked, flickered, then opened. A simple command line. One sentence. If you're reading this, you already know too much. I froze, and then it began to scroll. Spectre was a whistleblower archive, but it didn't come from outside. It came from inside Celsius. Someone, I still don't know who, had built a digital vault of evidence. Internal memos from legal urging destruction of compliance documents. Audio clips of Mashinsky mocking users. Private Slack threads where senior devs discussed ways to delay exits without alerting panic. There were even voice-to-text logs of investor calls labeled with emotional readouts. Caller distressed. Use empathy script. Caller angry. Escalate to loyalty team. Delay refund. Each file was a bomb. But one folder stopped me cold. It was labeled, buried bylines. Inside, a PDF titled, Intel on Politicians. Notes about donations. Leverage points. Mutual favors. Not illegal, maybe. But undeniably corrupt. We weren't just manipulating markets anymore. We were manipulating narratives, in boardrooms, in DC, in press rooms. This was a game of power. And it wasn't just financial. It was institutional. The more I read, the more paranoid I became. Suddenly, every server ping felt targeted. Every footstep in the hallway sounded like surveillance. So I copied everything, burned it onto a clean SSD, swallowed my fear, walked out of the server room, and told no one. That night, I didn't go home. I went to a 24-hour diner and sat in the corner booth, staring at the hard drive in my backpack like it was cursed. Because it was. I had become dangerous, not to myself, but to a system built on silence. The next day, I came into work and found my desk cleared. Laptop gone. Badge revoked. Security told me I was on temporary reassignment. No explanation. No access. No answers. My name was scrubbed from Slack. Emails bounced. Just like that, I was a ghost. A human asset turned risk profile. They hadn't fired me. They'd erased me. But they made one mistake. They hadn't found my backup. Or the burner phone I'd buried under a loose tile in the server room bathroom. It buzzed the next night. One message. You saw it, didn't you? No name. No sender. Just an IP trace that led to a VPN exit node in Iceland. Whoever Spectre was, they knew I was still out there. And they were watching. That's when I understood the final truth. Celsius wasn't collapsing. It was protecting itself. Burning its own files. Shuffling money into newer wallets. Scripting legal defense narratives. It wasn't dying. It was shedding its skin. And people like me? We were liabilities. Living evidence. Ghosts of a truth too big to kill. But too dangerous to let speak freely. So I made a choice. I'd go dark. Disappear. Then speak when no one expected me to. Because the collapse was coming. And when it did, when the media caught up, when the subpoenas landed, when the lawsuits started to multiply, people would ask, how did this happen? And I wanted to be there to answer. Not with guesses, but with files, with secrets, with truth. When a company like Celsius wants to destroy you, they don't fire you. They don't sue you. They erase your certainty. That's the first mitigation technique. Make you question yourself before anyone else has to. After I was reassigned, the world didn't explode. That's what caught me off guard. I expected confrontation. Lawyers. HR notices. Maybe even black bag security. But instead, I got silence. That's how you know you're inside a machine built on psychological manipulation. It doesn't need to touch you to control you. It just makes you feel ungrounded. My friends stopped replying. One coworker, Jen, messaged me late at night. I'm sorry. They told us you were having an episode. HR said not to engage. An episode. The term weaponized concern. A tactic lifted straight from the behavioral playbook they taught us. Empathy deflection. Make the whistleblower look unstable. Not evil. Not wrong. Just unreliable. It's cleaner that way. Meanwhile, my apartment started to feel like a surveillance cage. Wi-Fi lagged randomly. Emails bounced. Once, my building manager said two men claiming to be fire inspection had asked for unit access while I was gone. I knew I was being watched, but not publicly, not criminally. They were deploying what we called sub-threshold tactics. Delay, disorient, discredit. I knew because I helped design the protocols. I wasn't just out of a job. I was now inside a soft war zone, a silent battlefield where every social cue could be weaponized. And still, I didn't stop. If anything, it sharpened me. I created a rotating VPN, reformatted my phone weekly, split the Spectre drive into 5 parts, stored across dead drop locations in 3 different cities. I wasn't paranoid. I was methodical, because paranoia assumes irrationality. What I was experiencing was precise psychological warfare, engineered to fracture perception. And then came the reconciliation offer. It arrived via encrypted email from a lawyer I'd never met. Alexander appreciates your past contributions. He believes this is all a misunderstanding. Enclosed is a consulting retainer with NDA provisions. We'd love to find a way forward. 6 figures. Clean exit. All I had to do was sign and disappear. That was the second technique, buyout silence. Give the target a graceful exit so they never go public. So they convince themselves it wasn't that bad. I stared at that contract for hours, finger hovering over the trackpad. Then I closed the laptop, because I knew the price of silence, and it was always more than they offered. The days bled into weeks. I lost track of time, started sleeping on couches, watching news cycles, waiting for the collapse. But it didn't come. Not yet. The manipulation machine was still spinning, still pumping stories, still faking health. Until it slipped. An article on Reddit, small but viral. A Celsius user showed proof of a missing withdrawal. More joined in. A pattern emerged. Soon, Bloomberg picked it up. Then CNBC. Then subpoenas. I smiled for the first time in months, because the shadows were finally showing seams. But I also knew this was when they'd tighten their grip, because the more public it got, the more desperate they'd become to protect the illusion. And they weren't afraid of media. They were afraid of evidence. Me. That's when I noticed the tail. 2 blocks behind me. Same car, 2 days in a row. 3rd day, it disappeared. But not before I sent a message. A dead drop in an internal channel. I still have everything. I'm not alone. Try harder. That night, I got a message from Spectre. No words. Just a link. It opened to a private forum, a thread labeled Threads of Collapse. Dozens of entries. Internal whistleblowers from other departments, all documenting soft warfare, home internet outages, wellness checks from fake psychologists, bank account freezes, background reputation smears. It wasn't just me. They'd built a playbook for suppressing dissent, a full-scale psychological suppression framework designed to mitigate legal exposure through intimidation and confusion, not violence. But the beauty of subtle tyranny is that once it's exposed, it shatters faster than brute force, because it relies on secrecy. And now, we had a network, we had files, we had narratives, and soon, we'd have a microphone. You expect collapse to sound like an explosion, something loud, violent, final. But that's not how it happened. Celsius didn't detonate. It leaked. One cracked pipe at a time, one frozen account, one deleted tweet, one buried byline that refused to stay dead. I remember the moment it began. June 2022. Markets were red. Crypto was bleeding. But inside the Celsius network, the internal dashboards were worse than the public ones. I still had access, barely. Just enough to see the red flags blinking across server nodes like silent sirens. Delayed withdrawals exceeding threshold. USDD pool liquidity risk greater than 68%. Whale alert, tier 1 investor wallet depleting. I texted Spectre. It's happening. No reply. Didn't need one. We both knew. Then it went public. A blog post. Polished. Sterile. Due to extreme market conditions, Celsius is pausing all withdrawals. I laughed out loud. not because it was funny, but because I could still hear Mashinsky's voice echoing in my head. "We don't pause. We build. Celsius is bulletproof." Now they were standing in front of the fire, pretending the building was just under renovation. Reddit melted first, then Twitter, then the lawsuits, frozen pensions, suicidal investors, people who'd trusted the vision, who had staked their identity in a system we'd manipulated into a digital Ponzi with better branding. I watched it unfold from the shadows. Burner phone in one hand, court filings in the other. News anchor voices dissecting what I'd been screaming into the void for months. Where did the money go? Who was in charge of compliance? Why were red flags ignored? Simple questions. Brutal answers. Answers I had, but no one had asked me yet. Because whistleblowers only get airtime after the empire burns. Not before. And then the mask cracked. Mashinsky arrested. Indicted for securities fraud, wire fraud, market manipulation. 12 years. Not enough. He didn't just steal money. He rewrote the meaning of trust. He turned transparency into theater and made people doubt their instincts until they couldn't tell the difference between a wallet and a noose. I'd expected relief, but what I felt was something colder, a kind of grief, not for them, for me, because I wasn't innocent. I'd built the stage, wired the lights, wrote the scripts, and even though I'd walked away, I'd also stayed quiet for too long, and the silence had cost people everything. The day after Mashinsky's sentencing, I went back. Not to Celsius. To the server room. The building was empty. Lights off. Desks abandoned. But Vault C, the cold storage, was still locked. I broke in. Out of instinct. Out of ritual. Inside, the blinking light was still there. One last heartbeat from the machine we thought we controlled. I pulled the drive. No backup. No copies. I took it with me. Then I watched as the tech I once believed in became evidence. That night, I sat in a motel room, pulled the curtains closed, opened a mic, and hit record. My name doesn't matter, but the story does. And if you're still holding on to the idea that tech is always progress, let me tell you what it looks like when that progress starts feeding on people. This isn't about blockchain. This is about belief, and what happens when you weaponize it. Because Celsius didn't just collapse. It collapsed people. And now, I was going to rebuild what mattered. Not their brand. Not their narrative. The truth. They say justice brings closure. Whoever said that never sat in a deposition room under a fake name, facing attorneys who care more about optics than truth. Justice doesn't bring closure. It brings paperwork. And a question no one prepares you for. What do you feel responsible for? The subpoena came by encrypted email. Anonymous server. One line. Your testimony has been requested under sealed protection. Case, US versus Celsius Network. I didn't hesitate. Not because I was brave, but because I couldn't live with what I hadn't done. They flew me into DC under alias, Jordan Malik. An empty suit. A borrowed name. A hotel room with blackout curtains. The night before, I couldn't sleep. Not because I was afraid of being found, but because I couldn't stop hearing the voices of people we'd betrayed. The man who emailed support 3 times before his life savings were frozen. The mother who posted screenshots of her child's tuition fund, trapped in pending status. The veteran who said CL was the only system he'd ever trusted. I'd read every case, every name, because I needed to carry them into the room with me. The courthouse was colder than the server room, but quieter. They walked me into a sealed conference chamber. Cameras off, transcripts encrypted, lawyers in navy suits. One pushed a folder toward me. Inside, my entire digital life. Slack messages. Encrypted backups. The Spectre files. My own recorded voice, stripped of context. The prosecutor leaned forward. How long did you know? When did you choose silence? What do you believe was your role? 3 questions. That's all it took to reopen everything I'd tried to compartmentalize. I answered. Slowly. Fully. No grandstanding. No moral high ground. Just facts. How the server code worked. How CL was inflated. How emotions were studied and weaponized. How influence became infrastructure. When I finished, one of the agents nodded. This changes the timeline. Thank you. That was it. No applause. No absolution. Just another man's mess, recorded and filed. And me? Still somewhere between traitor and survivor. Outside the courthouse, I didn't feel free. I felt invisible. Not hunted. Not heroic. just spent. Because testifying is just the act of giving away your guilt in manageable chunks. And what's left behind still lives in your bones. In the weeks after, I heard nothing. No emails. No threats. No specter. The world moved on. News cycles shifted. Other collapses. New tokens. Fresh promises. People forget fast. And that's the most dangerous part. Because the architecture of manipulation never dies. It just gets rebranded. One night, I sat alone in a co-working space. Not as a developer. Not as a whistleblower. Just a man. I opened a blank document. Typed one line. This is not a story about Celsius. It's a story about what you believe and who builds that belief. That's where this began. Not in a server room. Not in a courtroom. But in the aftermath. In the quiet realization that truth is only useful if it's passed forward. So now I speak, not to expose anymore. That part is done. Mashinsky's in prison. The company's in ruins. The case is closed. But the questions, they're still alive. And so is the system that allowed it. Which means this story still matters. Even if you never hear my name. I record this now from a place no GPS can find. A space between the past and the future. Between who I was and who I refuse to become again. Not a whistleblower. Not an engineer. Just a voice. Telling you what I saw inside the lab. Because that's what Celsius was in the end. Not a company. A manipulation lab. A full-scale behavioral test site where belief was the variable and profit was the output. We engineered loyalty metrics the same way tech companies optimize clicks. We crafted emotional bonds using scripts, tone maps, and social psychology templates. We studied withdrawal behavior like psychologists study addiction patterns. We didn't just manipulate crypto markets. We built emotional economies fueled by identity engineering and data-curated hope. And the lab? It worked. Until it didn't. Because the flaw in every manipulation experiment isn't technical. It's human. People don't crash all at once. They fracture. A tweet. A refund delay. A story that doesn't align with the polished video you just watched. And eventually, even the best illusions can't survive too many cracks. But what no one tells you is, manipulation doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to last long enough. Long enough for the money to clear. The loyalty to harden. The trust to be unrecoverable. That's the game. So here's what I've learned, and what I want you to know. 1. If someone offers you identity in exchange for belief, run. Real systems don't demand your personality to function. 2. If the story is always heroic and never uncertain, question the narrator. Because truth isn't smooth. It's jagged. And anyone who tells you otherwise is selling you silence. 3. Watch what they don't measure. In our lab, we measured everything. Except integrity. I speak now not because I need forgiveness. I won't get that. I don't expect it. But because I owe you something. The blueprint. Not of Celsius. Of how belief is turned against you. Slowly, rationally, surgically. The way silence is incentivized. The way doubt is packaged as disloyalty. The way real people become psychological test subjects in systems they think they control. You might never work in crypto. You might never hear about Celsius again. But you will meet another system. Another voice. Another narrative crafted by people who speak in confidence, but build in shadows. And when you do, I want you to remember this. The most dangerous kind of manipulation is the one that rewards your belief, while punishing your instinct to ask why. Inside the lab, we had a term for people who questioned the system. They were labeled non-compliant assets. But now I see them for what they really were. Free. So if this story has done anything, anything at all, let it be this. Let it make you a little harder to manipulate. Because I can't undo the past. But I can help fortify your future. And that's something.